So what is the definition of a basis? A basis is a non-muksa item, a desk, chair, a non-muksa object upon which a muksa object has been placed. And now the object underneath becomes muksa. It takes on the status of the object that was placed upon it. So what would be a great example? If I would take a chair and I would, or a table, an end table, and I would put my wallet there before Shabbos with my money in it, and I would, we're going to see what the conditions are in order to create a basis. But let's say I fulfill all the creations in order to create all the conditions in order to create a basis. So then that end table now becomes muksa with the same status as the wallet. So normally, let's say you have an end table or a shrafraf. What is it called in English? Like where you rest your legs when you're sitting on the couch. I don't know what those are called in English, but footstool. Okay, there's another term for it that they use for like a living room one.
Hassock.
Okay, whatever it is.
Ottoman.
Whatever you put your legs by the couch. So if somebody puts their wallet there before Shabbos, and with the intent, we'll see, to keep it there for Shabbos, then that object now takes on the muksa status of the wallet, and you're not able to move the end table, you're not able to move the leg rest, because you have given it the status of muksa. Now there's a very interesting question about what types of muksa create a basis. For instance, does a kli shemalachta le'iser create a basis? If I put, the example I brought was money, because money is muksa machmas gufa. But what if I would put a hammer on my end table? Does that hammer make the end table into muksa itself as a basis? The reason why you might argue not is because theoretically, I can use the hammer on Shabbos. A hammer is only a kli shemalachta le'iser. A kli shemalachta le'iser is only muksa if it's not being used legufo, if it's not with sorach mekomo, then it's muksa. But in many situations, a hammer is not going to be muksa. And therefore, when I put a rock, when I put a wallet on top of my end table, so then it's clear that it becomes muksa because there's an object on top of it that cannot be moved and has no purpose on Shabbos. And the end table takes on the status of the rock or the money. But when I put a hammer there, so maybe that's not a potent enough form of muksa in order to create a basis. I actually had this past Shabbos because one of my children got a little upset. So he ran upstairs and he locked all the bathrooms from the outside with a little tool, a little toy. He stuck it in, he locked all the bathrooms from the outside. So it was a cute little shtick until he realized that by doing that, he had sort of broken the mechanism a little bit, and we couldn't reopen it using his little toy that he had used to lock the bathroom. So I wanted to take out a screwdriver in order to use the screwdriver to open the door. Now, can I use a screwdriver on Shabbos? The answer is yes. It's klishma lachta l'iser. It's normally used for building, so it's klishma lachta l'iser. But if I have a heter purpose, I wasn't going to do any actual building. I just needed something that was thin enough to get in and turn the slot. And but the problem was that my screwdriver was in a drawer full of tools. So is the drawer allowed to be open? Seemingly the drawer, the tools are all there. That's the place for the tools. So when all those tools are in the drawer, seemingly the drawer is a basis, the davar aser, and it should be muksa itself. So this is a great shaila, because it's only the kli shemalachta l'iser. Does that create a basis? This is the question. So in the Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa, he's a little bit mesupik about it. In a different sefer from Rishlom Zalman Orbach. Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa was not written by Rishlom Zalman Orbach. It was written by Rav Neuwirth, but he was a very close Talmud of Rishlom Zalman Orbach. So most of the psakim are based on psakim that he received from Rishlom Zalman Orbach. But there's another sefer called Shulchan Shlomo, which is a different Talmud of Rishlom Zalman Orbach. And he has on Hilchos Muksa, he has on three values on Hilchos Shabbos. And he writes that Rav Shlomo Zalman, there was a little bit of a suffix about it, but Rav Shlomo Zalman said, the basis definitely can't become any more muksa than the object that's placed on it. Meaning, even if a klishim alach to l'iser does create a basis, it's only the buses is only going to get the status of the klishma lach v'lisser. It's not going to become more chomer than the object that's placed on it. And therefore, the worst case scenario is that my drawer has become a klishma lach v'lisser. So I'm allowed to open it in order to access the screwdriver, because right now it closed is blocking my access. So with Litzorach Bekomo, I'm able to open it in order to get to the screwdriver. The question is whether I was able to close it afterwards. Because at that point, I have no need to close it anymore. It's no longer Litzorach Bekomo, unless it's jutting out into the middle of the room and people are going to walk into it and people need to walk by. But assuming it's in a side room, which it is in my house, it's in a side area. We're not really using that area on Shabbos. It's like where the washing machines are and the dryers. So question if I'd be able to close it. But as some of you would point out, like you do another shiurim, but I would definitely be able to close it with a shinui, and I'd be able to kick it closed or elbow it closed or something like that. Okay, this is in terms of the definition. What is the mucker? What is the source? So the source for this idea of a busis comes from a Mishnah in Shabbos. And I am going to, are you able to see the makaros on the sheet now, on the page? Yeah, okay, very good. So we're going to take a look at, just going to scroll up here. Here we go. The Mishnah in Shabbos. The Mishnah says as follows, on Kuf Mem Beis, Ha'evin, Sha'al Pi Achavis, if you have a stone that is resting on top of a barrel on Shabbos, Mata Al Tzida, you can take the barrel and tilt it, V'hino Felas, that the rock falls off. But if the barrel is found amongst other barrels, and if you would tilt it, the rock would fall off and it would smash another barrel and ruin another barrel, break a barrel. So then you can be magbiyad the chavis. You could pick up the entire chavis with the rock on it, move it to an area where it's no longer around the other chavios, and then tilt it off. Okay. Says the Gemara, Amar Rav Huna Amar Rav, Lo shanu ela bishocheach. This din that you can tilt the rock off of the barrel, or that you can even pick up the barrel and move it someplace else, this was only taught when you forgot the rock on top of the barrel. Aval bimaniach, but if you placed it there with intent, nase bosses ledover ha'aser, it becomes a bosses ledover ha'aser, and says Rashi. And then it's Osir Lahatosa, Sha'afa Chavis Muksa. Then you're not allowed to tilt the barrel anymore, because then the barrel itself becomes Muksa. Meaning the Mishnah is the anti-Bosses. In the Mishnah, what do we see? In the Mishnah, you're allowed to move the barrel, the Bosses. You could even pick it up and move it someplace else in order to knock off the rock. That's not treating it as Muksa. So says the Gemara, yeah, that's because it didn't become a Bosses in the case in the Mishnah. Because in the case of the Mishnah, you forgot it there. This is already foreshadowing one of our criteria, one of our conditions in order to create a busus, that it has to be placed deliberately. But if you put it there deliberately, so then it becomes a busus, and you're not able to move the barrel. You can't even tilt it to knock off the rock. You certainly can't move it, because the busus, like the rock, is muksa. Okay, a couple of more introductory points. Once a busus, always a busus. What does that mean, once a busus, always a busus? Once it becomes a busus on Shabbos, if the rock somehow comes off, let's say the wind blows it off, or let's say a Gentile walks by, or what if Be'isser, you took it off? In all these situations, the barrel is still muksa, because it was a busus when Shabbos began. It remains a busus for the entire Shabbos. Therefore, even if, so again, you have your wallet that you placed on an end table, you cannot move the end table on Shabbos. As we just saw, if you forgot it there, so then you can tilt it off the wallet, you might even be able to move the whole end table, but if you placed it there deliberately, the end table is muksa. And if someone else takes it off, a little kid picks it up and puts it away, the end table is still muksa. What is the lumdus? So,
just about to ask you that.
Oh, what's the lumdus of a busus? What's like the whole svara here? Why does the table become muksa? So the idea here is that the busus becomes butl to the object that it's servicing. The wallet is placed on top of the end table. The end table is now servicing the wallet. It is the place where the wallet is being kept. It's where it's being guarded. It's where, therefore, it becomes batel to the wallet, and it takes on the status of the wallet. Now, we're going to need to see, and that's going to be part of our conditions, what if we're talking about something which is completely insignificant compared to the buses? Like, for instance, you put a tiny little pebble on top of a huge dining room table. So does the dining room table become a buses now to this tiny little pebble, tiny little stone, which is insignificant? So we're going to see that, no, if the svara is that it becomes batel to the object, so there's going to need to be some relative chashivus when we think about the buses as opposed to the object that's placed upon it. And we'll see all of that right now. So let's really get into buses. Today we're going to see five conditions, I believe. Five conditions that you need to fulfill in order to create a buses. So let's do them one by one. I hope we'll finish all of them tonight. Number one, condition number one, and this is the one that I just mentioned. The buses needs to be servicing the object that was placed on top of it, the muksa item. So let's take an example. If you have a pot of food on your blech and you want to insulate it. Now, we did all the halachos when we learned Dinei Bishul, so we spent some time on hatmana. And so we're not going to get into all those details right now, but let's just assume for now that you have a pot of food, and in order to keep the pot warm, in a mutter way, you put some wool on top of the pot, right? If you don't cover it completely, for instance, that's a mutter way that you can do it. So you put some wool, but you don't use wool. You know, like nowadays, we use towels. We put a towel on top of the pot. But let's say you have some unrefined wool. So unrefined wool, I know this doesn't happen so often, but just to illustrate the point, unrefined wool is muksa, because it's not yet usable. It doesn't really have a purpose. It's unrefined. So if you have some unrefined wool, or let's say you would take some dirt and put it on top of your pot in order to insulate the pot. So in these situations, the pot does not become a basis for the unrefined wool. Why? Because the wool is actually servicing the pot. The pot is not servicing the wool. The wool is there in order to insulate the pot. It's not that you're putting it on top of the pot in order to protect it on top of the pot. You don't want any kids to get to it. So you put it on, why do we put our wallet on a table or on a bookcase? Because we don't want kids to get to it. We don't want it to get lost. We don't want it to get kicked under the couch. So the table is servicing the wallet. But when you put the wool on top of the pot, so the wool is actually servicing the pot. So again, the wool might be muksa, so you can't touch it with your hands. You might have to knock it off. But the pot does not become a basis and become muksa. Another example, people apparently used to take carrots and, you know, Bugs Bunny might have done this. I don't remember. But they would take carrots, they stick them in the ground in order to preserve them so that they don't start to wilt. So they would stick carrots. I mean, I know carrots grow in the ground, but apparently the Gemara talks about that people would stick carrots in the ground in order to keep them fresh. I guess before refrigerators. So the ground is probably a good place, a little cooler. You stick it in the ground, it keeps it, it preserves it. So now, can you take that out on Shabbos? Is it become a basis to the dirt that's on top of it? Let's say you put some carrots down, you put some dirt on top of it. So again, the carrot doesn't become muksa because it's a basis to the dirt, because the dirt is servicing the carrot. So you could pick up the carrot. We've spoke about this already, this exact example. When you pick up the carrot, what ends up happening? You end up moving dirt, but that's okay because that's toto min atzad, indirect moving. Litzorech davar hamutter. You're doing it in order to get the carrot. So it's litzorech davar hamutter. It's toto min atzad because you're not moving the dirt directly. You're just pulling up on the carrot. So this is condition number one. That's that the buses must be servicing the muksa item. And that's normally, in many of our cases, that's what's happening when you put a wallet on top of a table. So the table is servicing the wallet. It's not that the wallet is now protecting the table or the wallet is keeping the table warm. It's not that the wallet is servicing the table. The table is servicing the wallet. That's condition number one that we normally will have. Condition number two, the muksa item has to have some type of relative significance in comparison to the buses. So the classic example that they bring to illustrate this is, let's say you have a muksa item that you throw over your door or you hang on your door. Okay. I'm trying to think of what a good example would be. But again, some type of material that's not usable. And you throw it over the over the door. Now, are you able to move the door? You let it open and close the door. Or let's say you have a hook on the back of your door and you hang something on the back of the door. You hang a muksa item on the back of the door. So are you allowed to move the door? And the answer is yes. Why? Because the door's primary purpose is for opening and closing. You're not putting the item there because, meaning the significance of the door is much, much greater in terms of opening and closing it than it's serving as a basis for this muksa item. The other classic example that they bring is if you throw a few coins into a drawer, an empty drawer, and you throw like a few agurot, a few pennies into the drawer, not because that's the money drawer and that's the place where you always keep your money, but you're quick cleaning up quickly for Shabbos and you throw them in there because you just need a place to stick them. So there, the drawer doesn't necessarily become muksa because the pennies are so insignificant. I only put them there because I didn't really have another place to put it. When I put a pen in the drawer and that's the place for the pen, so then the drawer is clearly servicing the pen. Oh, the drawer is worth much more money. The piece of furniture is worth much more money than the pen. That's true. But the pen is significant. And the significance of putting it into the drawer is that you're doing it in order to protect the pen. That's why you're putting it there. So it has some type of significance as opposed to something that you just throw there because you don't have a place to put it. So that's condition number two. Those first two conditions, again, are not the most meaty conditions. Condition number three is where we start to get to some much more meatier material. Condition number three is that the muksa item has to be placed there for a certain amount of time. And here we come upon a very big machlokas rishonim. The Beis Yosef quotes this here, right here in the beginning of Shin Tes. And we're going to see the Shulchan Aruch's psak about it in a minute. Two shitas, Rashi versus Rabbeinu Tam. Okay, grandfather, grandson. Rashi holds that Rashi's machmir. As long as you put the item there with intent for it to be there during Bein HaShemashos, the object underneath becomes a basis for the entire Shabbos. So if you take a wallet and you put a wallet down and your intent is for it to be there just for Bein HaShemashos, you don't necessarily plan on keeping it there the whole Shabbos. What would be an example? Let's say you found a wallet on the street and you call the guy, he's a Gentile, and he says, oh great, I'm gonna come by to get it, and I can only come by Friday night at 10 o'clock at night because I have to leave. I have a flight Saturday morning, and therefore I can only come by late Friday night. So you put the wallet with intent on an end table right near your door. And you only plan on it being there for Bein HaShemashos because Shabbos morning, it'll already be gone. The Gentile is going to come and pick it up. Says Rashi, that's called a basis. Because anytime you put something with intent for it to be there for Bein HaShemashos is our critical time when it comes to muksa. We've been saying that the entire Zman. Migo diskatsoi leBein HaShemashos. So it becomes muksa for Kol HaShabbos Kula. That is the Shita of Rashi. Comes Rabbeinu Tam, his grandson. And this is also quoted like this in the Sefer HaTrumah. Sefer HaTrumah was a Talmud of the Ri. The Ri was Rabbeinu Tam's nephew. So the Rabbeinu Tam's nephew, this is a great grandson of Rashi. His Talmud, the author of the Sefer HaTrumah, Rabbeinu Baruch, so he also writes like this. It only becomes a basis if you have intent for it to be there the entire Shabbos. Meaning, let's say you have a specific plan to remove it during Shabbos, like we said, like a non-Jew, or let's say you plan on removing it via tiltel or through a shinoi. You put something muksa on your end table for Erev Shabbos, but you plan, for whatever the reason is, Shabbos morning to move it. You're going to move it with a shinoi. You're going to tilt it off because tiltel menatzav tzorach davar amutar. You're going to need the end table. Right now, the kids are all running all over the house. I want to put the wallet up high. But then all these kids, all my nephews and nieces, they're all going home Friday night. They're coming over for the Friday meal. It's just me and my wife. We don't mind if the wallet's on the floor. So I'm going to need this end table. And this is the only place I can put my wallet. So I put my wallet there, Erev Shabbos. I leave my wallet there, Erev Shabbos. I put it there with intent. It sits there. And Shabbos morning, I'm going to need this end table for whatever reason. So I'm planning on tilting it off. I'm planning on knocking it off with my elbow. So does that end table retain its status of muksa for the entire Shabbos? According to Rashi, yes, because you put it there with intent for it to be there for Ben HaShemashos. According to Rabbeinu Tam, no. It needs to have intent that it's going to be there for the entire Shabbos. A very fascinating discussion that's related to Shitas Rabbeinu Tam is a candelabrum, right? Candlesticks. If you think about it, we've been saying that candlesticks are muksa. This is just a great example for going through the lumdas here. Candlesticks, we've been saying, are muksa for the entire Shabbos. We know candlesticks are a big problem. What do? If you have the candlesticks on the Shabbos table, you have to also put challah there in order so that the candlesticks, so that the table is a basis of davar ha'asar and a davar ha'mutter. Why are candlesticks muksa the whole Shabbos? So according to Rashi, it's barur why. How come? Well, I light a candle, a fire, on top of my candlesticks before Shabbos. Fire, we said, is muksa machmas kufa. It's real, real muksa fire. And therefore, my candlesticks are a basis for my candles. It's a basis for Ben HaShemashos. So it remains a basis for the entire Shabbos. So my candlesticks are now muksa machmas kufa the entire Shabbos as a basis. But according to Rabbeinu Tam, we all know that the candles are going out at 11 p.m. on Friday night. They only last for so long. So I'm putting them on top of my candlesticks, but they're not going to be there. The fire is not going to be there Shabbos morning. So I know when I'm putting them there, I'm putting them with, intent that they're not going to be there the entire Shabbos. According to Rabbeinu Tam, the candlesticks should not become a basis. What's the worst that the candlestick is? I don't know, maybe it's a klishim lach de l'isser. Maybe it's a klishim lach de l'isser, but it certainly does not become a basis for the candles because I don't have intent for them to be there the whole Shabbos. So this is what the Taz writes. The Taz writes that if you hold like Rabbeinu Tam, then the candlesticks can just be moved Shabbos morning. Comes the Mishnah Brura and the Ber Halacha, and he rejects this. So even that's why I wanted to go through it here for the Lumdus. The Taz says that you can move your candlesticks Shabbos morning because they're not a busus. They no longer have a flame on them. They didn't become a busus because you didn't have intent for it to be there the whole Shabbos. It's not a busus. Comes the Ber Halacha and the Chazon Ish, and they all argue with this. And they say that this is very different than putting a wallet on a table. The candlestick is the place for the candles. A table, okay, you could put a lot of things on a table. You happen to put a wallet on a table. But since the candle, the entire purpose of the candlesticks is to hold the flame, so even Rabbeinu Tam would agree that it becomes a basis, because that's the whole purpose of the candlesticks. So it's an interesting svara, but I just wanted to bring out that example because I think it illustrates nicely this machlokas here between Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam. Now that we know that, we could finally turn to the Mishnah Brura. So let's take a look in Siman Shintes. And we're going to start, we're going a little bit out of order because just in order to do it in a logical way, let's take, at least logical for us, let's take a look at Sif Dalet. So we're in Siman Shintes, Sif Dalet. So here the Shulchan Aruch quotes from the Mishnah and the Gemara that we saw on Shabbos and Kuf Mem Beis. Shochach even al pi chavis omo salakar. If you forgot a stone on top of a barrel or money, alakar on a pillow of some sort, mate chavis al tzida v'ha even nofelis uminayar akar v'amos noflin. You can tilt the barrel and the stone will fall off. You can shake the pillow and the money will fall off. V'im ha'isa chavis bein ha'chavios, and if the chavis is found amongst other chavios, and it would be dangerous or it would be damaging to do such a thing, b'inyan she'enu yachol hatos oso bimkoma, in a situation where you would not be able to just tilt it and have the rock fall off, yachol hagbia, you can lift it up, kimo shehi, like it is, ima even, with the even on top of it, l'makom acher, to a different area, lahatosa, and then, in order so that you can then tilt it, lahatosa sham, kidei sheyipol me'alah, in order so that the rock falls. Now, here's the important line for what we're talking about right now. V'im hi nicha maleya midaito, But if you put that rock or that money there deliberately, al das she yisharu sham b'knisa Shabbos, that it should be there for when? For Bein Hashmashos, for Knisa Shabbos, Osir Lahatos Ulinayar. It is Osir then to do what we just said. We just said that if there's a rock on top, you could tilt it off and let it fall down. Why let him move the barrel? Why let him move the pillow? Isn't the pillow a basis? So Shulchan Aruch says that is allowed only if you didn't put it there deliberately, right? The Shulchan Aruch said, Shachach. That's the first word of Sif Dalet. But if you put it there deliberately, for how much time? For the time of Bein Hashmashos, so then it's Usr. If you look in the Be'er HaGol on the side of the page, so he tells you that's Perish Rashi. That's Rashi Shita. V'yesh Omrim. But there are those who say, says the Shulchan Aruch, Da'afilu hinichem sham al dashi, yisharu sham b'knisa Shabbos. Even if you put it there with the intent that it'll be there for Shabbos, the beginning of Shabbos. Kidei shiitlam b'Shabbos. But your intent is that you're going to move it on Shabbos. That's your intent. You're going to end up moving it on Shabbos. Lo asru ella b'manicham el al dash yisharu sham kol haShabbos. Then it's not usr, because they only made the din of buses when you have in mind that it's going to be there the entire Shabbos. So this second opinion is the opinion of Rabbeinu Tam and Tosfos. So we have here a stam v'yesh, and as we've said many times, when you have a stam and a yesh, halacha k'stam, we paskin like the stam, which means we paskin l'chumra like Rashi. If you take a look though in Mishnah Berurah Chaf Aleph, so the Mishnah Berurah in Chaf Aleph tells us, a few words in, the second opinion, Tosos, what does he hold? Sviru lehu delo nasis basis klal. It doesn't become a basis at all. Kevin shechashav l'salik me'ilav ha'muksa acharkach. Since you were planning on the muksa being moved off later, u'bemakom pseida yesh lismoch al deyazu. And in a situation of pseida, in extenuating circumstances, so you would be able to rely on this opinion. So we paskin like Rashi l'chumra, but if you need to, in certain situations, you'd be able to be mako. Okay. What's an application? So I heard a case of a very interesting application of this kula of the Mishnah Berurah that b'makom pseida you could be mako like Tosfos. There was a hotel here in Eretz Yisrael where they were allowing the guests to light Hanukkah candles outside of their rooms. They put chairs outside each room, and everyone was able to light their Hanukkah candles outside their room. So everybody lit their Hanukkah candles outside their room, out of the door of their room, on these chairs. The problem is that overnight, after everybody was sleeping, the Gentile hotel staff came and collected all of the chairs and stacked them up and put them in the dining room with all the other chairs. So people woke up in the morning and they said, "Where are the chairs?" And the hotel said, "Oh, what do you mean? They're in the dining room. You don't need them anymore." So now we have a problem. Why do we have a problem? Because seemingly, we paskin like Rashi, all of those chairs, you put your menorah there deliberately, right, with intent for it to be there, certainly for the beginning of Shabbos. So now the chairs have all become a basis l'davar aser. So the kula that when they asked the Rav in the hotel, so he said, you're right, they shouldn't have taken the chairs. But since they've taken the chairs and we're not going to aser all the chairs, no one's going to have any place to sit for the Shabbos meal. So he was makel. I don't know who the Rav was in the hotel, but he was makel based on this Mishnah Berurah. Mishnah Berurah says that b'makom hafsed or b'makom hadchak, there's room to be makel for the shita of Tosfos. And the hotel had planned the whole time to move the chairs. But when the hotel put it there, which is an interesting question, because when you put it there, you probably had in mind that you were going to leave it there for the whole Shabbos. But the hotel didn't have in mind that you were going to keep it there for the whole Shabbos. So it becomes an interesting shaila. But that was a shaila I heard that was very much connected to this question. Okay, condition number four. And that is, and this is something that we've already been speaking about a lot and mentioning, the object needs to be placed deliberately and not simply forgotten, right? We've sort of been talking about that the whole time. And this is probably the most important condition for buses, because people will often forget objects of muksa on top of heter items, not realizing and thinking that, oh no, maybe I've created a basis. This gets very interesting. So for instance, the Mishnah Brura in Yud Ches here writes, Al Dashi Yisharu, says the Mishnah Brura, Aval im hinicham bekavana b'chol, v'lo haydaito b'feirish Yisharu sham b'shabbos, v'achar kach shichachim sham mikri shochech. Very interesting case he says here. What if I put it bekavana in this place? I took my wallet when I got home from work, and I put my wallet purposely on the end table. That's where I keep my wallet. I put it there. I was planning on putting it there. But I was planning on moving it before Shabbos. I put it on the end table, but I said to myself, I have to move this before Shabbos because I don't want the end table to become a basis. But I forgot to do that. Says the Mishnah Brura, it's not a basis. Even though I placed it deliberately, and that's its place. That's where I usually keep it. But I didn't want it to be there for Shabbos because I knew that this Shabbos, I want to move the end table. But I forgot, and I ended up leaving it there. So the maisa of putting it there was a maisa of deliberate placing. Yet it still doesn't become a basis because I had not, in my mind, I didn't really want it to stay there all of Shabbos. Okay, a further extension. Listen to this case. Let's say I placed it deliberately with intent for it to remain there all of Shabbos. So I came home, I put my wallet in the jar that's on the end table, and I had in mind I'm going to keep it there all Shabbos, and I'm not moving the, who moves end tables around on Shabbos? I'm leaving it there, I'm not moving the end table. So I put it there with intent to remain for Shabbos, but I then changed my mind, and I intended to move it before Shabbos, and I forgot. So there, I put it there with intent for it to be there on Shabbos, and then I changed my mind, but I forgot to end up moving it. Shlomo Zalman Orbach says, that also doesn't create a basis. Because even though you placed it with intent for it to be there all of Shabbos, and this is one further step. Another very interesting case, and here we have a little bit of a machlokas, here we're not going to be so makel. Let's say I placed it deliberately with intent for it to remain there all of Shabbos. But I also plan on putting on this end table a davar mutter in order that the end table will be a basis l'davar aser and l'davar amutter. We've been saying a basis l'davar aser and l'davar amutter, you're allowed to move on Shabbos. So here, Rav Moshe was machmir. And Rav Moshe wrote that l'maisa, if you put it the wallet there with intent for it to be there all of Shabbos, that means you created a bona fide basis. Now, it's very nice that you also had intent to put a davar amutter and therefore to transform it from a basis the davar aser to also basis the davar aser amutter. But the maisa, you never did that. So to tell me up until now, like we've been saying, that I'm not going to create a basis the davar aser because in my mind I never wanted to put it there, or I wanted to, but then I changed my mind. That means that when I went into Shabbos, I didn't want this object to be on there and to create a basis the davar aser. But in this case, I did want it to be there, and I did want to create a basis l'davar aser. I just also wanted to create a basis l'davar amutter. So Shlomo Zalman thought there might be room to be makel, but Rav Moshe has a tshuva. Rav Moshe was machmir about this. Okay, going weiter, just because I see we're running out of time, the same Mishnah Brura that I just read in Yud Ches, so he quotes a very famous Magen Avram regarding basis, famous in the world of basis. The Magen Avram writes, I'm not going to read it inside just because of time, the Magen Avraham writes that if you place something and it's hanocha be'akrai, what does that mean, hanocha be'akrai, derech akrai? It means you put it there and you don't really have any specific intent. Meaning, I put my wallet and I just happened to put my wallet on the table. I didn't forget it. Meaning there's three examples here. There's one extreme is where I forgot it. I put it there and I didn't mean it to stay there, or I just sort of threw it someplace. I forgot it there. Then there's the other extreme. That's where I put it with intent. What if I put it there, but it was just because that was what was available to me right there. Like I walked into the house. Maybe the better example I'll give you is in the freezer. So you have your Shabbos ice cream that you're planning on serving on Shabbos. But you put a piece of raw fish. Remember, raw fish was more machmir than raw meat. So we'll use raw unsalted fish, which is for sure muksa, we said. So you take raw unsalted fish and it's on top of your ice cream, your Shabbos ice cream. So are you able to take out the ice cream on Shabbos? Seemingly the ice cream is a basis l'davar aser. And the answer is that even though I placed it there, and I placed it with intent, I didn't like forget it there. I opened the freezer and I put it there on top of the ice cream. But I put it derech akrai. I wasn't like premeditating that I want it to be dafka on top of the ice cream. That happened to be the open spot in the freezer. So that's also, says the Magen Avraham, that's not considered putting it with intent. That does not create a basis. The Mishnah Berurah says, he has a little bit, he's mefalpeh a little bit, if you should rely on this lechatchila, if you shouldn't rely on this lechatchila. But this is in general what most people quote, that in order for it to be a basis, it has to be that you placed it there with intent and you wanted it to be there on Shabbos. You put your wallet there and you said, this is where I want it to be. It's not that I just sort of threw it there because I didn't have any other place to put it. This is, of course, only true if it's not its set area, meaning if you have a coin drawer where you always put your coins, so you can't say, oh, I just happened to have thrown my coins there. That's the purpose of the place. Okay, one last thing. We have 3 minutes. Let's just do the fifth condition. The fifth condition is that the muksa item has to be placed there with permission of the person who owns the buses. And this is, goes back to the hotel discussion. What does that mean? This is a Ramah. The Ramah in Dalet writes, and again, I very much encourage you to read it inside. The Ramah here makes 2 points. He says that you cannot aser somebody else's object against their own will. If I come into your house, let's say you invite me over for Shabbos, and I come in Friday afternoon, and I go, oh, I really need a place to put my wallet. And I see a very nice end table, and I put my wallet there, and I say, this is a great place. I'm keeping this there for all of Shabbos. So now we get home from shul, and the host, you want to move the end table. But you can't because my wallet's there, and my wallet was placed with intent to be there all of Shabbos. Or, again, we pass like Rashi, even just for Ben Ashmashos. So the Balabayas wants to, you know, knock it off and use the end table. Can he? The answer is that he certainly can. Why? Because I don't have the right to turn his buses, to turn his object into a buses. It has to be that it's my end table. This is very interesting when it comes to family relationships. For instance, how do we deal with spouses? So Rav Yoshev says, regarding this halacha, right, without getting into Choshen Mishpat about does the husband own all of the property in the house, the Rav Yoshev writes that regarding this halacha, it's dependent on who is the owner of this object, who is the general user of this object, not who is the Choshen Mishpat owner. So for instance, the husband's shtender, that he's the one who generally uses the shtender. So the wife, if she puts a davar muksa on it with intent to leave it there all of Shabbos, it doesn't become a basis. And lehefech, if the wife has an object that's hers, let's say she has a jewelry box, and that's where she keeps her jewelry, and the husband puts his wallet on top of her jewelry box, it doesn't become a basis. Oh, but I'll, Basha, you know, whatever he owns, she owns, al pi halacha. No. When it comes to these halachos, it goes based, Rabbi Yoshev writes, it's in your source sheet, source 7, it goes based on who's the general user of this object. And therefore, the wife is considered the general user of this object, the husband can't aser it. In the Sefer, Hilchos Shabbos B'Shabbato, he writes that we find by Shutfin, though, that they can aser things to each other. And therefore, if there's something that is equally used by two people, so they can aser it. In Orach Shabbos, he brings down that a child is never really able to aser anything because he doesn't have the das, he doesn't have that ability in the house. So if a child puts something on top of something, even if the child announces on Erev Shabbos, you know, here's my electric toy and I'm putting it on the couch and this is where I want to keep it all of Shabbos, it doesn't make the couch into a buses because the child doesn't have the right. Unless the child has like a drawer that the parents set aside for the kids' toys. So then when the kid puts it there, that's really the parents putting it there. One last thing, and we'll end with this. This is the Mishnah Berurah in Chaf Zayin. The Mishnah Berurah mentions that even if you don't have permission, if you do something which is clearly beneficial to the owner and he would want it, that's considered permission. So for instance, the example that the Mishnah Berurah brings is let's say you come into your friend's house, you're spending Shabbos there. He's already gone off to shul, but you daven mincha already. You're hanging out in the house, and you see that where his candles are, that the candle's tilted a little bit, and you're nervous it's going to fall. So you take an object, you take a plate, and you put it underneath the candle, and indeed, the candle falls before Ben Hashmashos, and it sits there on top of the plate. Now he comes home, and he says, oh, who put this plate here? I wanted to use this plate on Shabbos. It's considered a busus. Why? Even though you didn't have his permission. But obviously, if you asked him, can I put this object here? Now, he might have said, I prefer a different object. But when push comes to shove, he wants that object there in order to protect the table from catching on fire. So that would be considered a busus. One last example. I'm sorry, I'll just one very last example. And that is objects that are communal objects. Rav Vosner, in the source sheet, in source 9, so he discusses a yeshiva bachar in yeshiva. What is he able to make into a busus? So he says his bed he can make into a busus, even though he doesn't own the bed. So maybe he can't do it. He's not the bailam on the bed. No, but the yeshiva gives him the bed for the year. It's his bed. But the shtenders, for instance, in the base medrash, the tables in the base medrash are not his. So if he puts a dvar muksa, he puts his phone on a shtender in the corner of the base medrash, and he says, I'm going to leave it there for all of Shabbos. That does not make the shtender into a busus. It's not his shtender. Oh, but it's my shtender from my makom in the base medrash. No, but the shtenders that are put in the base medrash are for anybody to use. It might be the one you generally use, but it would not turn the shtender into a busus. So we saw today 5 conditions in order to create a busus. The 5 conditions were, number 1, it needs to be that the busus is servicing the muksa item. Number 2, the muksa item has to have significance. It can't just be like a pebble. Number 3, the muksa item needs to be placed there for Ben Hashmashos, or maybe Lekula has to be placed with intent to be there for the whole Shabbos, but it has to be set placed for a certain amount of time. Number 4, what was number 4? Number 4 was that it has to be placed deliberately. It has to be that you didn't forget it, that you placed it deliberately. And number 5 is it has to be placed with the permission of the person who owns the busus, who owns the base underneath. Okay, this was our hakdama to busus. We'll probably have, as I mentioned, 1, maybe 2 shurim on busus, and then I think we will be completed with muksa. Everyone should feel good. Everyone should have a good week.
Is that Rav Vosner not like Rav Liashev?
You're saying because the one who usually uses it. So no, I think it's a little bit different because I think what he's trying to argue, I think that's why you can asur your bed. Even though the bed doesn't belong to you, apichosh and mishpat, oh, maybe it does because you rented and you paid tuition and there. Okay, you can be down on the bed about whether the bed is considered yours or not. But the shtender, even if you're the one who usually uses the shtender, like the husband vis-a-vis the wife, but in a base medrash, the yeshiva doesn't intend that it becomes your shtender to the exclusion of everybody else. Everybody has the right to use that shtender. And therefore, it's not miyuchud for you specifically. Again, if the way he writes it, if I remember correctly, the way he writes it is that if, in Achanami, if everyone's given a miyuchud shtender, and this is your shtender, then in Achanami, then the yeshiva gave you, this shtender is your shtender. But if it's just the shtenders in the base medrash, so you don't have the right to asur one of those shtenders by putting an object on it.
Okay.